The journey of an earthly pilgrim walking with the Lord on a daily basis on the dusty trails of this world is rarely smooth or straight or easy. We do not need to walk with the Lord for very long to know that this is true. The Jews in Persia at this time were a minority. Since their deportation from Judah by Nebuchadnezzar about 100 years earlier. And at this time, from the records of Esther, we understand that a man called Haman had convinced the king to kill them all. In this story of Esther, we encounter a profound interplay of God's sovereignty on one hand and human will on the other. God prepared the place and the opportunity, and his people, that is Esther and Mordecai, chose to act. It is impossible within the short time for us to read the whole 10 chapters of Esther, so I'll be filling in for you as we consider this passage. And I pray that this message today will challenge each one of us here to pursue a purpose-driven life. We will begin by looking at how this young girl became a queen, which I believe was a providential placement. This is covered between chapter 1 and chapter 2 up to verse 23 of chapter 2. The king had earlier organized a lavish and liberal party for the whole kingdom. And during that feast, he commanded his queen, Vashti, to come wearing her royal crown so that she can show her beauty. He wanted to place her on display. And I'm sure they have had a little bit to drink at that point. But Esther refused to come, and this led to her downfall. Vashti refused to come, and this led to her downfall. Through a rigorous process of selection over several months, Esther emerged as a new queen. Who is this Esther? In Hebrew, Esther means to hide, perhaps alluding to the concealment of her Jewish identity. The name is believed to be derived from the old Persian word called Sarah, which is star. As you have heard that portion read to you, she did not have a good start in life. And because she did not have a good start in life, it didn't mean that she was going to not end well. Just think about that. She was orphaned and was raised by her cousin Mordecai. Chapter 2, verse 7. He was of the tribe of Benjamin. He comes from the lineage of King Saul. His great-grandparents had been carried into captivity. So Mordecai himself was born in exile. We are told that Esther was she had a lovely figure and was beautiful. Verse 7, she obeyed Mordecai, who forbade her from revealing her nationality and her family background. Verse 10 and 19 of chapter 2, among all the virgins that were brought to the harem, she won the favor of everyone who saw her. and she finally won the approval of the king, and therefore she became queen in the place of Vashti. The selection of this girl, Esther, as queen emphasizes how God's providence orchestrates events for his own purposes. She will play a significant role later in the deliverance of her people. And what do we know about Mordecai? He was a caring person who continued to monitor the progress of Esther as she assumed her responsibility as queen. This same Mordecai had, prior to this time, uncovered a plot by two men to assassinate the king. That is documented for us in chapter 2, verse 21 to 23. And when he reported it, the men were hanged. Mordecai's name was then recorded in the chronicles of the king. As the story unfolds, we believers should recognize that, like Esther, we are chosen for specific purposes in God's plans. This should provide comfort that God places us where we are needed, even in difficult circumstances, and he calls us to act courageously in faith. Number two, the Jews are threatened. That is covered between chapter 3 and chapter 4. This man, called Haman, was promoted, and all people were to bow down to him. But Mordecai did not bow. Why? Jews did indeed bow to government authorities at times as a sign of respect. If you look at Genesis chapter 23, verse 7, 1 Samuel chapter 24, verse 8, you find that there was bowing there. But in this situation, Haman's ancestors were ancient enemies of the Jews. Israel had been commanded to blot out the name Amalek from under the heaven. In Deuteronomy chapter 25, verse 17 to 19, and Exodus chapter 17, verse 16. But I think for some of you who know the story, we know that Saul spared them because in his wisdom or disobedience, he said, the men took the best in the land to sacrifice to the Lord. And of course, Agag, who was the king then, also was spared. So for those of you who remember the story of Saul, that was actually the reason why he fell out of favor with God. So Mordecai was not about to kneel before this wicked Haman, by doing that, he would have acknowledged that Haman was a god. Daniel's three friends, you remember in Daniel chapter 3, had the same conviction. That was why they were thrown into the den, because they refused to bow to the statue. How do we apply this to ourselves? We should never let any person, institution, or government take God's place in our lives. When people demand loyalties or duties from you that do not honor God, don't give in. It may be time to take a stand. Haman was an Agagite, chapter 3, verse 1, a descendant of Agag, king of the Amalekites, 1 Samuel chapter 15, 20. The Amalekites, like I said, were old enemies of the Israelites. Haman's hatred was not just directed at Mordecai, but to the Jews as a whole in Persia. As second in command in the Persian Empire, Haman loved power and authority and the reverence shown him. The Jews, however, looked to God as their final authority, not to any man. Haman realized that the only way to fulfill his self-centered desires was to kill all those who disregarded his authority. His quest for personal power and his hatred for the Jewish race consumed him. He convinced the king to kill all the Jews. After the edict to exterminate the Jews was issued, the king and Haman sat down to drink, but the city of Susa was bewildered. Chapter 3, verse 15b. Perhaps they were toasted to the death of the Jewish people. How does this affect us? I must say that racial hatred is always sinful. We must never condone it in any form. Every person on earth has intrinsic worth because God created people in his own image. Therefore, God's people must stand against racism whenever and wherever it occurs. Two, who is Haman? Who is your Haman, I may ask you? That is, who is your enemy? Do you know who your enemy is? I will tell you from 1 Peter chapter 5, verse 8, we're reminded, be alert and of sober mind. Your enemy, the devil, prowls around like a roaring lion looking for someone to devour. Furthermore, the scripture encourages us to put on the full armor of God so that you can take your stand against the devil's schemes. For our struggle is not against flesh and blood, but against the rulers, against the authorities, against the powers of this dark world, and against the spiritual forces of evil in the heavenly realms. Ephesians 6, 11 and 12. The temptations of Jesus in the wilderness, Job's trials, were all from the same source, the devil. Know the source of your troubles and how to overcome them. Sisters and brothers, hear these words. For the weapons of our warfare are not carnal. For the weapons we fight with are not the weapons of the world. On the contrary, they have divine power to demolish strongholds. Three, point number three, for such a time as this, the courage to stand. Mordecai's response to the decree highlights the importance of recognizing the reality of our circumstances. His lamentation demonstrates that there are times when distress and injustice require us to awaken from complacency. This point emphasizes how recognizing the urgency of a situation is crucial to preparing ourselves for the roles God placed us in. Mordecai's plea to Esther shows the power of faith-driven action, even in despair, encouraging believers to be aware of their unique positions and the responsibilities that come with them. In chapter 4, We see Esther wrestling with the grave situation of her people, the Jews, who were facing annihilation. Mordecai encourages her to recognize her unique position and the potential for significant good. So through her courage and faith in God, she made an impact. As a result of Mordecai's counsel, Esther realized and accepted her role in God's plan. She initially hesitated, but ultimately embraced the courage to act despite the overwhelming risk. Her willingness to risk her life presents a model of faith and bravery for believers. "Go," she says, "gather all the Jews who are in Susa and fast for me. Do not eat or drink for 3 days, night or day, and I and my attendants will fast as you do. When this is done, I'll go to the king, even though it is against the law. And if I perish, I perish." Through combined courage with careful planning, Esther intercedes for the Jews. Esther's story encourages us to trust that God equips us for the task he has set before us. This encourages you and I to willingly step into difficult situations with the understanding that our positions is not coincidental, but purposeful. Just as Esther was chosen for a purpose, every believer has a purpose and a call to respond, and a call to respond to respond with courage and faith. Esther's eventual courage mirrors that of Christ, who also took up his role in God's redemptive plan. God places us in specific positions in our lives, and we must have the courage to act for his purposes. Trust him, of course, as we do so, that he will equip us for the task at hand. It's almost like she read Joshua chapter 1 verse 9 that says, "Have I not commanded you? Be strong and courageous. Do not be afraid. Do not be discouraged. For the Lord your God will be with you wherever you go." The fourth point to make out of this is, through divine incidents, the Jews are delivered. This is covered between chapter 8 and verse 10 and chapter 10. The fourth point has already been made, but for the sake of emphasis, I'll repeat it again, that Mordecai has had a death plot, and at the time he saved the king, the king's life. B, the king can't sleep and decides to read a history book, chapter 6, verse 1. C, he reads the exact page needed for the moment, reminding him of an unpaid reward to Mordecai, chapter 6, verse 2. D, Haman's plan is exactly reversed. The intended victims are the victors, chapter 7, verse 9 and 10. This sermon teaches us that God sovereignly prepares individuals for significant roles in his divine plan, and that our personal circumstances, including trials, can be used for greater purposes. At some point in our lives, and some may actually be undergoing this, we face threatening times, isn't it? And I would like to share one story with you today. This situation occurred in a town called Jeba in Nigeria. It's a personal story, and it happened in the early 90s. Toyin and I were working in a cottage hospital which we established there. There was only one industry in the town which produced craft paper. As always, industrial disputes do arise. So the junior staff of the paper mill went on a peaceful protest to demand for improvement in their employment rights. It all turned sour, however, when the anti-riot policemen arrived in the town and live bullets were fired, resulting in many casualties. Our hospital provided care for the victims, and we didn't anticipate trouble was at our door until the police came charging in into the hospital. Searches were conducted, and medical records were carted away. But before leaving the premises, they invited me to come to their office. I must say that the welcome I received there was nothing really to report to you about, because it was quite unwholesome. By law, treating the injured was not a crime. In fact, it is our duty, it was our duty to look after the injured and the sick. It seems that some mischief was determined against us. After writing my statement, I was instructed to appear at the state police headquarters in the capital city in the following week. The days leading up to this seemed like months. I was filled with fear, confusion, uncertainty. How could you do good and you now get this kind of harassment and you're not sure what you've done wrong? So then came the day we traveled to the city, about 2 hours' drive away. We had prayed, but humanly speaking, couldn't figure out how the situation will be resolved. So whilst anxiously waiting in the reception of the police station, I heard and recognized a voice I had known. When I was growing up, in the northeastern part of Nigeria, which is several miles away from where this situation was happening. When I looked up, and my wife will always tell you that I'm not very quick at taking opportunities, but this time, I stood up, I looked at the man, I recognized him. I went straight up to him, and he recognized me, because he had worked with my father over 20 years before this time in the northeastern part of Nigeria as a police officer himself. So after exchange of greetings, he asked why I was in the police station. And when I told him, he reassured me that actually the man, he had retired, but he had come to see the boss that I was invited to see, that man himself worked with your dad in Maiduguri. as they say, the rest is history. So the guy who was supposed to harass me, the story all changed. It became a friendly chat. He was also interested in finding out how my mom was doing. So, as they say, the rest is history. I could never have imagined that I would meet these two men on that day, because my dad had left the police force years and years before then, and I had not had any business with police anyway. So in his sovereignty, God prepared a way of escape for us. This could only have been the hand of God at work. The person who was meant to intimidate and harass us became our ally. The devil meant it for evil, but God turned it for good. And that made us, we felt encouraged to continue with the good work that we were doing in the hospital. As I conclude, I want to invite you to just think about this. Everywhere you turn to today in our culture, you will realize that many have drifted away from God. Darkness. We see darkness. We see immorality. The question I'm going to ask you is, where are the Esthers and the Mordecais in our midst? Where are they? I believe I'm speaking to them here. Who will fast, who will pray, and appeal to residents in their communities, in their places of work, in their places of recreation, in their places of sports, and be the salt and the light of the world? For we have been called to a time like this. May the Lord help us to take on with courage the responsibility that He has called us to bear as His people, so that we can become the beacon of light. Amen.